Welcome to the podcast. It's the best podcast in the world.
This is going to end up on the show. I know it, motherfucker.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 95 of Epitome of Stupidity, your favorite allegedly metal podcast. That their intro music is courtesy of the magnificent Whores, who are back in full force with their new album, War, and that particular song is called Sicko. That damn 33-minute long album has been on actual repeat since the day it came out for me, and I mean that completely literally. So we'll get to them here shortly, but if you're new here, welcome in. I'm Clint. I'll be your host. If you're not new here, you should probably start taking your meds again. But other than that, you'll also know that the podcast is once again partnered with Sonic Temple here in Columbus. By the time you're hearing this, the second set of weekend passes will be given away. But there's still one more set to go, so stay tuned. What is Sonic Temple, you ask? Well, shit. If only I had a commercial around here somewhere to explain.
Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival returns to historic Crew Stadium. Slipknot. Disturbed. Pantera, the original Misfits, Evanescence, Limp Bizkit, Judas Priest, Stain, Breaking Benjamin, A Day to Remember, Falling in Reverse, Sleep Token, Rise Against, 311, Seether, Mudvayne, and many more. May 16th through the 19th, Columbus, Ohio. Tickets on sale now at SonicTempleFestival.com.
As has been said, after every time I run that damn commercial, that is going to be 4 days of fucking fun, loud, and intoxication, I'm quite sure. So, again, stay tuned for the next set of passes to be given away and how you can win that. Until then, let's talk about what I've been listening to, because I'm going to hold you hostage like that. After last week's show, I obviously listened to more St. Pierre Snake Invasion, as well as some Hippotractor. I'm hoping some more on them and both Half Me here real soon. But other than that, I'm not lying when I say since the Whores album came out, Tuesday the 16th, that damn thing has just been on repeat. Like I said, it's 33 minutes of just fucking whoop-ass and aggression and vicious and pissed off. And, you know, that stuff just kind of speaks to me. And I love it. It makes as much sense for me in my brain for it to go from track 10 to track 1 as it does for it to go from track 3 to track 4. Because, again, it's just been on actual repeat on a damn loop. And as of yet, I still can't get enough. Let's get serious for a second, though, and talk about being better drinkers. We're going to do this step by step. First step, go to brimminghornmeadery.com, order some award-winning mead, and at checkout, enter code EPITOMEAD, that's EPITOMEAD, for 10% off your order. Second step, get that Viking costume we both know is in your closet, out of your closet, put the damn thing on, and drink like a Viking. It's that simple. And again, pictures, videos, messages, after you're plenty intoxicated on this stuff and dressed up like a Viking, is absolutely welcome on my end. I can't wait. After that, we'll do some quick homework on Whores. Stop giggling, it's not funny. Formed in 2010, they've put out two EPs, 2011's Ruiner and 2013's Clean, as well as two albums, being 2016's highly acclaimed Gold and the just-released War that I've been talking about. I've said previously on this podcast, and I'll say again, that a lot of times I feel like they're music for grown-up grunge kids who are now pissed off about real adult things. Or just grown-ups, period, who are pissed about adult things. Oh, Christian himself has said on this stupid podcast before that they make grown folks music. But anyway, instead of me rambling about how much I love things like Every Day is Leg Day or how Imposter Syndrome gets me fired up every fucking time I listen to it, let's maybe get him on the line and smarten the show up a bit. Cue the dumb phone sound. Beep, 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 boop. Ring. And he answered. On with me now is Christian of Horace. Christian, how the hell are you today?
I'm good. I'm better than I've ever been, actually.
That sounds fucking lovely.
Yeah.
What I like to start all these off with a super simple ask. What are you listening to lately?
The new Piss Jeans record is probably my favorite record right now.
Yeah?
I like the new Meth record a lot, too. I haven't spent as much time with that because I just got it in the mail, like, late last week. But, yeah, that new Piss Jeans record is fantastic, man. I think I've got every one of the records. I think it's the best record they've ever done, which is a cliche thing to say about a new record, but I think it's true. It's so good, man.
I haven't made my way around to it yet. There's been a lot of stuff that's come out here lately. Like last week in general, you know, there's your new album, the Whore's new album, there was, and then there was like five other fucking albums that came out on Friday that were all.
Yeah. I knew Meth was releasing their record in April because I had spoken to Chris, who plays bass in that band, a bit about that last year. Because we're friends. We've like been to each other's shows and stuff. Our bands have never played together, but we've known each other for a little while. During the pandemic, actually, we talked about doing some music together with some mutual friends. But the second we started actually working on it, we opened back up and we got back to work with our respective bands. So sure. It's still probably pretty possible that we'll do something together.
I will fucking look forward to that.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah. I believe it. Before we get to the new stuff, let's do the whole Back to the Future thing and start with a retrospective type thing here. With what was it that made you want to start with music, and what drives you to keep at it?
Well, I always loved music, even when I was a little boy. Like I loved it over sports or movies or toys or anything. It's always my number one thing. I didn't really know that I could do it, or I didn't even know how it was made, because when I encountered it as a kid, it was completely fully formed, and I had no idea what the process was to actually make music, and I didn't think I could do it. And then I had the same experience that a lot of people had, where I heard music that was not super sophisticated technically, just like American hardcore specifically, and had that revelation that I could do it, and then started playing music. So I've always been absolutely obsessed with it. I listen to music a lot more than I play it, and I think that's really key. I did one of those Ask Me Anything type deals on Instagram last week, and a couple different people were asking me about songwriting stuff, and listening to music is really important. And like, if you're worried about lyrics, reading is really important.
Sure.
Like, it's strange because they both feel like passive experiences, but they don't have to be. You can listen to something actively and really be pulling it apart. And I think it's one of those things that once you do it enough, you'll build the neural pathway, and then you'll do it reflexively, and you won't even have to try to listen actively. You'll just start pulling it apart as second nature. So that's listening to music is the most important thing. And I think what keeps me going now is the feeling that I get when we hit that, I hate to sound like, you know, touchy-feely, but that flow state that people talk about. It doesn't happen all the time, but once in a while, when you're physically playing music, whether it's at practice or studio or live or whatever, sometimes you'll hit this feeling that you can do anything, and you can't make a mistake. And it's very hard to get into that state, but because you think you could think your way into that state, but that's because it's a thinking thing that's happening, but you can't. You have to act your way into it. And once you have practiced and played a specific thing enough times that it's not challenging for you anymore, you can start sort of thinking about it separately as you're physically doing it. And I never knew that could happen until it happened to me. And then the couple of times that it has happened, I've just been chasing that feeling like it's a high.
Sure.
You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, I believe it. The feeling of not having to care about whether, not necessarily not having to care, but like
a non-issue, yeah.
Right, just knowing that, no, this is going to fucking work, and this is going to be awesome. Yeah, yeah, that,
and then you can start trying other stuff, you know?
Sure.
In the moment. It's pretty great. For someone like me who's never, you know, I'm not a real accomplished musician, and I'm not humble bragging, I'm just not, but I also don't really want to be, I don't care. But, you know, for it to happen to someone like me tells me that it can happen to anybody. You just have to put in the work, you know?
Sure. I actually saw the Ask Me Anything threads that you were talking about there, and I believe your exact response was something to the effect of, listen to more rad music.
Yeah, yeah. It's true, man. It's
what true. What is some of the rad music that's got you to where you're at?
Well, it really changes, and, like, it's funny because there's both people who don't actually really like music or have a personal relationship with music will say this, and then people who are music fanatics will say this, and that's I like everything. Like, it's funny because it can mean I don't actually like anything.
Right.
or like I don't really think about it too much, or it can mean I'm possessed, which is what I am. I was just texting with a friend of mine before we started talking about how I'm possessed. Like, I can't even say there's not a day that goes by. There's not an hour that goes by that, like, I don't think about it, you know? And I don't know what that is, because I don't really come from a real musical family or anything. It's just, I got the bug, and it just hasn't gone away since I was a little kid, you know? So, I don't really remember what the question was.
The influences.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's changed over time, like, you know, when I was a real little kid, it was just stuff that was on, like, FM radio in South Florida, so, like, classic rock stuff, you know, that because Florida, at least at that time, was a good decade behind the rest of the country or the rest of the sort of urban centers of the country. So it was, you know, it was the 80s, but I was probably listening to a lot of 70s stuff, Aerosmith and, you know, stuff like that. I got into, like, hair metal stuff because I lived in such an isolated place that I wasn't really able to be exposed to any counterculture, kind of punk or hardcore or anything like that. But that was like when that shit was really going off. So I got into Motley Crue and Rat and Wasp and all the bands like that. This is when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old, probably 6th, 7th grade. And then I started hearing, at the same time, I started hearing both bands like post-punk bands like The Cure and Bauhaus and Love and Rockets, of course, also that stuff, because it's like what all the pretty girls or the girls that I thought were pretty in school listened to, and then at the same time all of my male friends who skated, and these gender barriers have, the walls have come down,
sure, yeah,
which is great, but in the 80s they were, you know, they were there. My friends who were skateboarding were all into hardcore, and specifically American hardcore. Like, we all liked the Sex Pistols and stuff, and I, to this day, that's my favorite record of all time, and I always say it, but it's the one Sex Pistols record. But Minor Threat specifically, Black Flag, I got into that music, and that was the thing I mentioned at the top of our conversation about, like, I was able to figure out how to play those songs, both The Cure and Minor Threat. Even though they're opposite ends of the spectrum aesthetically, what they have in common is that they're both sort of outsider music, which appealed to me very strongly at a very early age. So both those two things made me have that experience, that come to Jesus experience that a lot of musicians have, where you can see yourself in it, and it doesn't feel like it feels like you're a part of something instead of a spectator.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So that happened at a really young age. And then, you know, through college and early adulthood, I was really into the whole grunge explosion, of course. And, you know, people retroactively have termed noise rock. It's like it wasn't called that at the time.
Right.
That's a very modern term. But a lot of that stuff that was just big, big, heavy, loud guitar music, but it wasn't, you know, like in that kind of metal world or whatever. So I really got into that. I get into a lot of sort of indie rock in the 90s, Sonic Youth, Pavement, and Superchunk, and Dinosaur Jr. I love to this day. So, like, it's – and then over, you know, and then now in the current day, I listen to so much different stuff. I mean, people love to shit on that band Turnstile because they're getting famous and stuff, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, Turnstile are fucking great.
Oh my god, it's like, go to a show. They even say it directly in one of the records, like, you've got to see it live to get it. Because there's this, I don't like using the word community because it's a gross modern bullshit word, but you can feel the give and take that happens at their shows. You could feel it at Against Me shows back in the day too, where it really means something to people.
Right.
And it's overwhelming. It'll make me like get choked up in the moment. It's so cool. And yeah, stuff like that. I want to be able to have that same experience with my band.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And speaking of your band and kind of the outsider thing and, you know, all these relatable topics music wise, let's go ahead and jump to War. What has the reception been thus far?
Well, very good. Very good. And I was really concerned, because I try so hard to do this stuff, and I think a lot of people do, but like, I put so much of myself in it and in my honest self in it, and not trying to be something, but really trying to get down to a level of authenticity that I'm so close to it for so long that I take it more seriously than I should. It's just a rock band, you know? But like, it's so important to me that I put these unrealistic expectations on it, and then I think like, this is not as good as what we've done before. And it takes me a while to let it be out in the world and not listen to it at all, and then come back to it. And then I have the experience with this record that I've had with everything we've ever done. It's the best thing they've ever done. And it's like, it's difficult when I'm in the moment to think that, because I already know I have a better one in the tank. I got a better two or three in the tank, you know? So like, it's so hard for me to live in the moment. I'm either in the past or in the future. And the pleasure of life is living in the moment. And I know that intellectually, but
sure.
It has to happen naturally for me to really internalize it now. And that's happening now. Like, a lot of people have said some really nice things, so the reception's been great. Short answer.
That's, and rightfully fucking so. I guess to kind of jump around on my end, at least, and in relation to what you're saying there, did you feel, it sounds like you felt pressure to live up to Gold and the previous EP.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but not outside pressure. Pressure for myself.
Yeah?
I mean, I know that our band means a lot to some people, and I just don't want to let those people down. That's the number one. The number one thing is pleasing myself, but I don't think I am able to please myself 100%. So I have to be content with, don't let the people down that are counting on me. Yeah.
And my follow-up there that I have written down is, at what point did you realize that you successfully did that? And based on what you said previously, it sounds like that's starting to happen now.
Yeah, I mean, it just happened like last week. Yeah, I because I haven't, you know, I had to listen to the record all the way through to make sure the spacing was correct once it got uploaded to streaming stuff, because sometimes songs will start a hair late or they'll end a hair early, so I literally just put it on and let it play just for technical reasons. But I had that experience, but I'm like, this that, man.
Fuck, you know, yeah.
It's weird. So, and like, specifically that song that you mentioned, Hostage Therapy, before, like when we first started talking, like, I didn't know people were really responding to that song for some reason. Like, we don't have it in our live set, but we're probably going to put it in our set because so many people have said nice stuff about it, you know?
Fuck yeah. That's got to be a pleasant surprise, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's, you can never tell what people are going to like or what they're not going to like. It's impossible.
Have you had that experience previously?
Yeah, for sure. I can never tell what. Because I mean, I have my favorites, and I have ones that I don't like as much, and like, I would never reveal either of those things to the public because I don't want it to color their experience or think that they're supposed to like something or supposed to not like something. I will say that I will never put a song on a record that I'm not behind 100%. And we, you know, we had a bunch of songs that we didn't put on this record that just weren't ready, you know, and that happens a lot. So you can count on us never releasing a song that we're not behind. Now, whether you like it or not, it's a different story.
Right. So you speak about songs that were there but weren't ready. And
yeah.
I've got something kind of related to that here. Back in 2018, when we met in person for the first time, you told me you already had the track listing and album title for what would end up becoming this album. You even let me take a picture of the damn thing. And I was looking at that just yesterday as I was putting stuff together for this, and it's kind of crazy how many of those songs made it this fucking far. Case in point being, I've been waiting since 2018 to hear Every Day is Leg Day, and it did not it did not fucking disappoint. I hope that that song was always meant to be that pissed off.
Yeah.
It strikes a chord. But what happened to – so I guess what I'm getting around to saying is that it sounds like things like Luxuries of the Leisure Class, Show of Hands, Who Understands, etc. fall in the weren't ready category.
Yeah, we actually recorded we just refer to it as Leisure, Luxuries of the Leisure Class. We actually recorded it, and that's one of those songs that, like, we worked on it too much, and we took away what was I thought was great about it in the first place. So we recorded the entire song, like, everything, and then went, it's not good enough. So we've reworked it since then. There's, like, a main sort of riff in the song that I realized that I was trying to use that as sort of the basis of the song because it was the first thing that Casey made up the riff. It's the first thing that, like, came up. So I was trying to, like, capitalize on that. But the reality is that that part is the feeling, and everything else in the song needs to be in service of that instead of trying to go harder or louder or more intense than that part. So, and yeah, so I'm sure it'll be on another record, and because we've changed it. It doesn't even sound the same. It's, like, totally different. And it's also, like, it's in sixes, so there's a bounce to it that if you don't get the bounce right, it just doesn't work.
Sure.
And it just, all the life got sucked out of it because we worked on it too much, man. We really, you know, did it to death. So, yeah, we got back to what we thought was great about it in the first place. And I like it again, but it's, you know.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have a lot of bands say this, we have a ton of new stuff. We have to practice for tour right now, but in between this tour we have coming up and the next one, we're just going to go into space and try to hash out all these new songs. Because we've recorded demos on like iPad or whatever, but we're going to start actually hashing them out. Because we want to follow this up very quickly.
Fuck yeah, I'm for that. And I mean, at 33 minutes, it feels like, especially with what you've just said, it feels like it's some version of the old Kill Your Darlings type thinking.
I'm not familiar. Oh, like Kill Your Children. Yeah. I know that what you're talking about. Whenever we're writing set lists, we have that discussion too. Like, you don't want to leave something out. You're like, I love that song. And like, yeah, it's a bummer. But you have to do it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Keep everything as strong as possible.
Yeah.
So from 2016's Gold to 2024 with War, this album's been a long time coming. Let's walk through the cycle of how it came to be, from pandemics and drummers to injuries and everything in between.
Yeah, it's a pretty long story. My friend Calvin is just, he's editing right now. He's got like I don't know if you want to call it a documentary, because I don't think it's going to be like, you know, 90 minutes long or whatever, but it started out as a short film, and now I think it's going to be more, said he has a lot of footage. And it's basically detailing, you know, because I knew the first question people are going to ask us is what took so long. And every single interview, it comes up. And it's like, life is the short answer.
Sure.
You know? And when I keep talking about all the different things that I've been through and the band has been through in that interim, it just sounds like I'm complaining. So, like, I don't really like talking about it too much. I mean, the short version is we had to go through a couple different band members. I had three pretty serious injuries, two of which required surgery, and then the global pandemic. So, I mean, that each one of those things would set us back a year or 2 years. I mean, I was in physical therapy alone for almost 3 years, like, because of the different injuries.
Sure.
And, like, it makes it pretty difficult, man, to do anything else except, you know, lick your wound.
Make it through the damn day.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was doing, you know? And that's also why, like, I've been dropping weight now, because, like, I put on a bunch of weight because I had so many injuries. I'm taking it off now. But, like, yeah, it's just life. It's just life stuff. Everybody goes through it. I mean, we lost two different parents of the band.
Jeez.
Mean, pet, you know, like, so much stuff, man. So much stuff. So it's like, I need to think of a succinct answer to that question, because everyone asks it, and it's a fair question. But, like, It's not like we were sitting around. It's not like we were uninspired. We had life stuff that got, you know, even though we didn't want it to, that got in the way of the band, you know?
And at this point, it's old and tired to say, but at the same time, it's not like anybody plans for a fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
What can you do there?
I mean, that was 2 years that it got taken from us. Man.
Right.
You know, and I understand it, but, like, it was a weird time, man.
For sure. There's no... Yeah. No need to elaborate there. It was just weird is the right way to fucking say it. That was the fucking weird time.
We couldn't even go to band practice because, like, we practiced in a small enclosed room. And we wouldn't able to be 6 feet away from each other
sure.
in that size of that room. We would have to practice in a bigger room, which is just not
an option.
You know, no, absolutely not. So, yeah, it was tough, man.
Speaking of succinct ways to put it, it seems like Quitter's Fight Song might be some version of a succinct way to put it, where you seem to be going hard about things that have happened, but also just refusing to go down and taking each day.
I
kind of want to use the word anthem, but I don't want to be fucking lame about it, and because that makes.
No, I don't think that's a lame word. Yeah, I think we strive for that. I don't. I'm old enough now that I'm allowed to. Do what I want and like what I want, and it doesn't define me as a person. So, like, if someone say they're a hook or it's anthemic or something, cool. That doesn't mean anything bad to me. I get why it would to some people, but, like, I like to make songs that are, like, hummable, you know?
Sure.
I like music like that. I had that riff for a long time, too, before we turned it into a song. And that song used to be in 7, and when it was in 7, I really liked the way the main riff sounded, but then the other parts that were with it weren't strong enough, because they were also in 7, and like it just, and 7s work really well. Soundgarden does it all the time.
Yeah,
7s can really work, but the whole song has to be in that feel. So I added an extra beat and made the main riff 8 counts, and then it all fell into place very, very fast. But as far as like lyrically for that song, I try to recognize both the good and bad in myself, and just be as sort of forthright as possible about what I'm feeling, and I try not to be super specific about what I'm actually talking about. Just because I think it, I don't want to tell people what to think, you know, but I try to make it like sincere, but open enough that it can be interpreted, you know,
sure,
more than one way.
So it's not, hyper specific to one thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is to me, but I don't want to reveal that to other people because
right.
I don't want to fuck up how they experience it. You know?
I was just talking earlier today about how Imposter Syndrome is one of those songs that every fucking time I hear it, I want to throttle someone or run through a damn wall. It just gets me fucking amped up in the best and worst ways. And
yeah,
it's there's no specific thing I get pissed at over it. There's no specific thing it takes me to. It just fucking builds up
it's
the rage.
Angry song.
Oh
man.
God,
yeah,
it's so damn good.
An angry song. We've got that in our set. We're playing that song. We have another new song that obviously is not released or anything. That's sort of in that same vein. It's like a cross between that song and the last song on Gold, the prepared statement
song.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
yeah.
It's real similar, where it's like one kind of loping riff that we just drive into the ground, you know?
Mm, so good.
That song on Gold actually started out as just the main riff in that song. And we didn't have an A part or a B part or a C part. It was just that riff for like 4 minutes. And once I started like writing lyrics and really getting into it, I'm like, it can't be that. As much as I want it to be that, we used to, it didn't have a name. We called it Swan because we wanted it to sound like a swan's riff.
Sure, right.
Hypnotic. But I was like, we're not swans, man. If we do something like that, it's not going to have the power that they have doing, like, I love that stuff, but it's just not this band, man. It just didn't make sense. So.
Yeah, I haven't.
I love those stuff. They're really simple, and you just, it's all feel. It's my favorite riff.
Yeah, and like, sure, you're not swans, but you're definitely whores, and you guys definitely pull that shit off spectacularly. So, let's see here. We've gone through those two. Kind of in a different vein here. Or, you know what? Let's stick with Imposter Syndrome for just a second. That one,
Yeah.
You released that in what, late or early 2022?
I don't remember. I wanted to say it was last year. Maybe it was 22. I don't remember. I know what we were doing was we had some tour dates coming up, and we were like, we need to release something besides the tour dates so we can get more eyes on the tour dates and more people will be aware that we're playing. Because it's the cliche when you play in Columbus and a week later somebody goes, when are you coming to Columbus? It's like it happens nonstop. So, and that's no fault of theirs. It's like not enough people know. So like if you are going to announce some tour dates, if you have some kind of release or some kind of, you know, new merch or whatever, something to sort of tie with it, it gets more eyes on it. So that's why we really hurried up and like mixed that song and stuff, and it was still in its like infancy, but we were like, let's tie all this up so we can release it. And then I didn't want to not put it on a record, because it used to drive me crazy when some of my favorite songs by bands weren't on their actual records. Now that streaming is sort of the main thing, it doesn't matter as much, but I still think of things in terms of albums. And like Polvo is a great example. My favorite thing that they did was this EP, Celebrate the New Dark Age, and there's only like four or five songs on it. So like when you go look and you want to listen to them, even on a streaming service, it won't be listed under their album. It'll be listed as a single, even though there's four or five songs on it.
Right.
It's so annoying. So I don't want to be that guy, who does that.
Well, I speaking for myself here, I appreciate you doing that, because I'm the same damn way. Like, as you were saying that, I was trying to think of some other examples, and all I could come up with was Nine Inch Nails. Like, there's a couple Nine Inch Nails songs.
Closer? Come on.
Right, sure, of course.
So but good.
There's a couple, like, single-type things that aren't on albums, like the song they did with Health here recently.
Oh,
it's fucking great, but I forget about it because it's not on an album, and I want to put on an album and let it go.
Oh, right. Who wants to listen to one song?
Right. Yeah. I'm going to spend the whole song thinking about what am I going to turn on next.
Yeah. I love Nine Inch Nails, man. I didn't like them when I was a teenager because it was just Pretty Hate Machine, which I still don't really like. But Downward Spiral On, I love, man. What a great band that is.
The fucking weird thing is that I was the same way. Like, I still can't get into Pretty Hate Machine. Head Like a Hole is great, sure. Right.
It's too, like, beep, boop, boop. It's not angry enough,
Of it comes off better live now, but it's still never been my thing. But once I did pick up with Nine Inch Nails, I just absolutely adore him. I think Reznor's a fucking genius.
I almost bought a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt, and I was in New York working for a couple months beginning of this year, and I seriously was really close to buying one. Because it's, like, one of those things where, like, when they came out, you'd want to wear their shirt, but then when they got popular, you wouldn't want to wear their shirt.
Right.
Now that they're past being popular, in my mind, it's kind of cool again to wear a shirt.
I get exactly what you're saying.
But yeah, that Closer EP is incredible, man. There's one song on that record that is an incredible live performance with that guy, Josh Fries, who's in.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just doing like the chicken picking snare. And it's a drum cam, so it's like right on him during the whole song. I'll send it to you after the song. It's so good.
I believe it. I can't wait to see it.
Oh,
he,
so good. But the guy they've got now is incredible. That guy with curly hair. I don't know his name. Our drummer loves him too, man. Wow, is he good.
I saw them. I actually saw them twice last year. I saw them right after their induction into the Hall of Fame there in Cleveland, and that drummer.
Yeah.
He goes off on that fucking solo in Perfect Drug, and it's just like, fucking wow, man.
He's something else, man. I need to look and see what bands he was in before he started playing with Nine Inch Nails.
I should know this because I just read about it recently. But anyway, enough about them. Let's talk more about you. The from the fucking angry and riffy to the. Okay, let's do something different here. How about, what was the idea for Savage Reply?
It came up naturally. We didn't have the idea first. We were just, Brian is the engineer and co-producer of the last three records we've done. He and I spend a lot of time together in the studio because we will go in and record all of our basic tracks with the whole band. And then it's just me and him for weeks doing doing all the singing, doing all the extra guitar stuff, you know, the mixing I'm not there for, because he works better if he can just not have someone literally over his shoulder.
Sure.
So he'll do mixes, and then I'll give notes about, you know, at 1 minute, 2 seconds, can you make that louder or whatever it is. But we spend a lot of time together. And one of the things we do when we spend time together is fuck around. So he has a ton of different stuff at his studio, like a lot of different keyboards and like almost toys and like little tiny amplifiers that weren't even made for music. They're made for like radio. It's all like just all sorts of different stuff. So I was messing around on, I don't know, actually, I can't remember if it was him or me, and I don't want to get it wrong because it might have been him doing it. One of us was messing around on this little keyboard, and we started playing the melody that's the guitar riff in the actual song, back when I was a Savage. And we laughed so hard, we could not stop laughing. So it was funny to do like this little, you know, calliope sounding, like doo 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 doo
doo doo.
It's so fun. And that song I was trying to do, that was initially, I was trying to do like a birthday party ripoff, and it sounds nothing like that now. It gets so far away from it. Crazy. But so we started doing that, and we were just laughing so hard, and then we were like, okay, let's do like a little drum beat to that. We didn't even think we were going to use it for something. We were just fucking around, which, I mean, he's one of my best friends, you know, so like I've already texted him twice today. You know, he's one of my best friends. He's so funny. We have a very similar sense of humor. Yeah, so I can't say enough good things about him, and I feel like I'm, you know, up his ass in a lot of interviews, but it's like all I want is for people to just go down there and record with him and, you know, give him money, basically. He's the best, man. So then we started putting, like, this drum beat to it, and we were like, wait a minute, this could actually be kind of a thing. And then the idea just occurred to me, let's have this on the record, and we'll have, and then he also put, like, a vinyl sort of pop and scratch kind of sound behind it, so it just sounds like a record. Like, let's have somebody read the credits over this, and that's Bill Kelleher from Mastodon reading the credits. Yeah, yeah. They did something kind of similar in one of their records. They had Josh Homme read, like, a fan mail message that was sent to them, and, you know, he just replaced it and said, you know, my name is Joshua, and just talking about their band. I can't remember which record it's on, but, yeah, it's at the end of one of their records.
I can't believe I can't place that.
Yeah, I can send that to you too. It's pretty funny. It's one of those things that's sort of a relic of the old age, because it's one of those CD type things where it would just be at the very, very end.
Okay.
And if you just let it play, it'll come on.
Sure.
Like a regular
the track. Secret song thing.
Yeah, so it doesn't really work in the streaming age. You know, it doesn't really come off the thing. But yeah, I remember hearing that and thinking it was just hilarious. So I don't know.
You've got
it. It seems like it. And we also kind of want to, because of the so much time that it took between records, we wanted to kind of keep it light, which is why it starts with the ridiculousness of me and Douglas at practice. Also, we just kind of wanted to keep it like loose garments,
sure,
light. You know?
Yeah, no, and I love that too, because the you hear the laugh of whatever's gone wrong or just fucking around there at the beginning into that crushing riff, and then to end it like that, if you go to the Mastodon thing there, and it put me in mind of the 12 Precious Melodies or whatever it is there at the end of the Stone Temple Pilots album. But you mentioned Bill Kelleher. It seems like you guys have a kind of a long-standing relationship. He was on the AC/DC cover you did too, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he lives in Atlanta. He moved here from upstate New York in probably like the mid to late 90s, like maybe 97, 98, something like that. Because he and Braun were playing in Today is the Day in Nashville. And then they were down here in Atlanta for a High on Fire show. And they met Brent Hine, who also plays guitar in Mastodon. Then they started Mastodon. So I've known him for a long time, man. 25 years, probably. And, you know, we do stuff. Like, we go get coffee sometimes. And, like, you know, he owns the practice spaces where we practice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we shot our first video for the T-shirt song there, like downstairs there. The downstairs area used to be a big storage. It's like a garage with open bay doors, but they built it out, built rooms there now. There's a studio down there now, West End Sound, shout out.
Nice.
We recorded two songs there too. That guy Tom Tapley, who owns West End Sound, is a wizard. He's really great. But yeah, we're just kind of around each other, man. We've obviously never toured together or anything, but like, you know, if it comes up naturally, of course we'll do it. I would never, ever, you know, hey man.
Well, right.
You don't do that, man. If you're working, people see that you're working. They know you're available. I assume it'll happen at some point.
Sure.
But you know, it's just we just kind of have a we're just friends, you know.
If it works, it works.
Yeah.
The speaking of tours, can you quantify how excited you are to get back out and start playing these things?
Yeah, I mean, like you can hear, I know we practiced last night. I'm a crazy horse right now. My brain just kind of did a flip because my mom just sent me this song with Tom Jones singing with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and I just did Crazy Horse. It made me think about that, so I totally got off track. I'm kind of like that, though. I'll have, like, there's a woman who I've just started seeing, and, like, when we're texting, I have three different lines of logic going simultaneously, and I don't know what that is, but so that's what happened there. But, yeah, I'm definitely excited. I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to be in the act of driving down the road and you know, playing our songs every night. And I kind of just want to get back in the groove of that, because like after Gold came out, we did that for the next 3 years. Like I barely ever worked. I do film work in Atlanta and New York. I do a couple different things, but so I was dipping in and out of that, but not much. And if we're able to tour, you know, between maybe 4 to 6 months out of the year, it's enough to live on. Just enough. But it's enough. So that's my main thing, is I want to get back to the groove of that, so when we come home from tour, I don't have to immediately go back to work, and I can like think about new songs. And you know, that stuff is so time consuming. And if I'm working, I, you know, it's pretty physical work, and it's just I can't really do, you know, I can go to band practice and we can practice our songs and you can practice a set for a performance, but as far as doing new stuff and writing songs and recording and all that, that requires a lot of, for me, it requires a lot of brain time. So if we're able to get back in the swing of really touring a whole bunch, we can put a record out quicker.
Sure. You know? That'd be,
so that's the thing.
What is an average day for you?
Average what day?
Yeah.
Well, if we're not, I mean, on tour, it's a totally different thing. But if I'm in Atlanta and I'm not doing film stuff, I will tend to stay up pretty late. When I do film stuff, I generally have to get up very early. Like when I was up in New York working, I got up at 4:30 every day for, you know, 3 months. And it's, you know, it beats the shit out of you, you know. So when I get home, usually I'll stay up pretty late. I'll stay up probably, I don't know, 2, 3, something like that. And then I'll also wake up pretty late, like not quite noon. I mean, I got up at noon today, but you know, because I had practice last night, I'm kind of beat up from it. I'll usually, yeah, get up pretty late. I like to put on a record first thing. I've got my stereo is in, it's not in my living room, but I have speakers in my living room. So I put on a record and make coffee. And if it's just me, I'll usually make like a Chemex thing of coffee, which is like this big carafe, which is supposed to be like a pot of coffee, but I drink the whole thing. So I'll do that. After I get the coffee in me and I'm not dead to the world, I start answering emails, fan stuff, and going on social media and seeing if there's anything that I want or need to respond to. Follow up on stuff, whether it's tour dates or art, or like we have a bunch of new t-shirts that are being made. So I've been talking with a guy who, Jeff, one of my best friends from Austin. His company's called the Dakota Ring. He's done a ton of stuff for us. So he had sent me the designs for like the whole suite of new shirts. So going over those and talking about colors and quantities and all that kind of stuff. But it's band, like the nuts and bolts of band stuff. And once I'm done with that, I've got a little setup in my living room that's like a little baby amplifier and a little pedal board and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guitars. I just bought my 19th guitar, like 2 weeks ago. And then I'll usually play guitar for quite a while, like probably an hour or two. I try to make it a point of going out and walking like every single day. So then I will generally go out and go for a walk. And sometimes I'll listen to music on that walk. Sometimes I'll just do it without music. And then when I get back to my apartment, I'll have an idea for something new, whether it's lyrics or a riff or something like that. And then if we don't have band practice, I'm really into movies. So I'll either go to a movie. There's a theater right here by my apartment called Plaza Theater that's been here for almost 100 years now. So I'll go to a movie, or I'll, you know, watch a movie at home or whatever. And generally during that time too, I'll have a guitar. If I'm at home, I'll have a guitar in my lap. If I'm watching a movie with someone else, I wouldn't do that.
Sure,
if I'm
of course.
By myself, I just kind of keep it in my lap and just noodle around. Sometimes I'll have to stop the movie and, you know, record something because I think it's interesting or whatever. And that's pretty much it, man. It really revolves around coffee and music.
That's like, it's the second or third time in this conversation that you've said something that is strangely fucking, you know, jigsaw puzzle fit perfectly with my life, where everything revolves around coffee and music. I do the alcohol thing too, but whatever. What's the best movie you've seen recently?
Probably Zone of Interest. I don't know if you know about that movie
or not.
It's sort of about the
I know the name, but I don't know the synopsis.
Yeah, it's basically about a family who lives on the other side of the Auschwitz concentration camp. The father of the family is an officer at the camp. And it's sort of about the banality of evil, about how like the everyday of it creeps into people. And they don't show any of the torture that's happening in Auschwitz. You hear it. You hear gunshots and screams and stuff on the other side of the wall, but it's about their family and about how the evilness of that, even though initially they're sort of detached and it's like just a job for this guy and he's just doing his orders, eventually he starts to really like it. And it's about how the insidiousness of evil will just creep into a person's life, and you know, the unintended awful consequences of evil that you might not think of on the surface. You know, it's very good. I think it won some Oscars, and it's very good.
I will check that out. As you started saying it, I remembered that it was a World War II movie.
Yeah, and I'm going to go see Civil War. I'm going to a matinee of Civil War tomorrow.
I was talking about that with somebody just the other day. That looks really interesting.
He's one of my favorite directors, man. When I saw Annihilation, I wouldn't shut up about it. I was telling everyone, and then it got me into Jeff Vandermeer, the guy who wrote the story that the movie is based on. And the movie is not really beat for beat based on the novel. It's sort of just set in that world, really. But I've read the trilogy of those books from him. And then I think I have them right here. I've read another 1, 2, 3 of his books on top of that.
Are they under the palm trees there?
Well, I can't really show them because I'm doing this stupid thing. But, so it got me into him. And then, you know, he did 28 Days Later, which is incredible.
Sure.
Of course. He did Ex Machina, which was another, like, how is this one guy making all these? He's good, dude.
Yeah, man.
Alex, he's a great director, man.
Yeah, those are both a couple favorites of mine as well. So enough things that, again, I'm pulling things from you and I talking about other media things to back to you here. The first time we talked, or we did this in person, and to be completely full frontal here, I obviously I'd heard songs and seen videos of you guys playing live, but I was a little bit intimidated with you because I'd seen the live things where you're just fucking having at it and it's so intense.
Yeah.
But then in person you're pretty mild mannered and a normal damn dude, except for your willingness to just blatantly and correctly call out the Red Hot Chili Peppers as being dog shit. What's on stage, you're clearly a fucking different person. How and when does that change happen?
For sure. When I start warming up, because I have to do vocal warm up before we play, so it takes about 20 or 30 minutes. So while I'm doing that, I have my headphones on and usually have like a glass of water or an energy drink or something, room temperature.
Good note.
It starts happening then, where I just kind of try to not think about anything else and not get sidetracked. Start, you know, just really focus in a way that, you know, it's sort of like when you have a, when you get your best ideas when, like, you're in the shower or
sure.
driving, because your conscious mind is engaged, so your subconscious is sort of free to just go where it wants to. It's a similar experience when I'm doing my warm-up, because I'm listening and matching what's on my warm-up on my phone or whatever. But while I'm doing that, I can kind of get this singleness of purpose and just start, I just get very serious all of a sudden, you know what I mean? And, like, our the guy, who's, our manager has said it before that he, because he obviously knows me personally, and he said that he sees it too, like, as soon as I, like, you know, start getting on stage and getting my guitar and stuff, he just says, like, I look so angry, and I'm like, I'm not angry, I'm just, I'm not making an expression at all, and when I'm not making any sort of expression, my face naturally looks angry, my mouth is, like, the end, the sides, like, turned down,
sure.
it's, like, just how my face looks.
Resting
man.
Angry face.
Yeah, yeah, resting asshole face, yeah. and, you know, I just, because I'm focused, you know, I want to, it's the most important thing to me in my life, so I want to do it as well as I'm capable of doing it, you know.
Fuck yeah. And for whatever it's worth, whether it be a feather in your cap or not, I've been going to concerts, shows, whatever, however you want to phrase it, since 1990. I've been to at least one every year since, including 2020 somehow. And I'd never worn ear protection.
Oh yeah, you
and,
have to.
Yes, fucking can confirm. Your show there at Spacebar here in Columbus just trashed what was left in my ears. Like,
oh geez.
Before that, I could be in silence and it was just silence. Now there's no such thing. Now there's, oh yeah, that ringing's still there. And
yeah.
Now I have the ear protection. Now I have the, so
yeah,
this is.
You didn't wear earplugs at that show?
No.
Oh my God, dude.
It was
yeah.
so fucking loud.
Dude, how could you even enjoy it?
I enjoyed it thoroughly there, but 2 days later, I'm texting my buddy Brian saying, dude, my ears
oh my God.
Still literally hurt. This
yeah,
isn't normal.
Sorry, dude. Yeah, you should have worn earplugs.
Yes,
yeah.
correct. And
yeah.
I do, like, I keep them with me at all times at this point. I've got the, Eargasm is the ones that I continually buy.
Dude, they sent us some, like, for free, and I had them on my keychain, and the little container fell off, and I lost them.
Ah.
I've just been using those little orange ones that you get at Home Depot or whatever.
I love those damn things so much. Here's just a free plug for them.
Yeah, they're good, yeah.
Sure, they're a little uncomfortable to start with, but as soon as you're accustomed to it, like, I don't understand how I ever did it without them. Like, you, with the
yeah.
orange things, you know, everything can sound kind of muffled. These
yeah.
things just take that sharp edge off of everything.
Yeah, yeah. I always wear them when I'm watching other bands play. I don't wear them when we play. I need to. But it's also one of the reasons I don't stack my cabinets, because I don't want that coming at my face.
Sure.
I want it coming at, like, my legs, you know?
Yeah.
But the cymbals. And that's also why I don't like being on the side of the crash cymbal, because it's right next to my ear. So, yeah.
Yep. The cymbals and the treble.
Yeah, yeah. I have some really nice ones. There's the Grammys, the association or whatever for the awards show, has a nonprofit called Music Cares, and they offer musicians, like, free dental care or free, like, whatever. One of the injuries that I got hurt, they paid for some of my surgery, which is great.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
But anyway, they have, like, a clinic, you know, every now and again, where you can go and get fitted for ear mold, like, legit fancy pants earplugs. And same thing, I had those in a little keychain thing on my keys, and we were on tour in Europe. I let somebody borrow my keys. My keys came back without that on it. They fell off. Someone lost them. And the dude, with, like, an actual appointment with the, I think it's called an audiologist, I think. So for that appointment, and then also to get them made, it's a $300 enterprise, you know? Like, it's really expensive.
Right.
I haven't had them since, and I really need to get off my ass and drop the money and get them, because I'll be deaf. I'll go deaf.
I don't
want to be a deaf old person.
That,
you know?
Idea terrifies me, man. Like, it was.
Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No.
Take my eyes.
That fucking every time this comes up. I'll gladly not see. Like, I would love to keep seeing. Don't get me wrong, universe. But given the choice between the two, I'll keep my ears. There's that, I guess, again, to delve into other people's media, that The Sound of Metal or whatever the name of it was.
Oh, right. I haven't seen it, but I hear it's incredible.
Oh, my God. It's terrifying. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, it was you guys in Black Tusk that night, and my ears haven't been the same since. Wear ear protection, kids. Is the full thing out yet?
I don't think so. I think it's about to come out.
Yeah, and I can't fucking wait.
Yeah, they're the nice dudes. Yeah.
Yeah, they're fucking. It's another Georgia band.
Yep.
To kind of pull it back to you being a different person on stage. What's it like coming down from that?
Well, I specifically made this point to my bandmates that, like, I don't like talking about the set immediately after the set. I don't even like talking about it that night. If something went well, I'll say, like, hey, you did a great job, whatever. But if there's something that needs to be fixed, or if I want to say, like, hey, I'm sorry I messed up that part, or anything that needs work or that's a problem, I don't address it until the following day, because I will be emotional about it, and I will not. What I'm trying to say will be obscured by the shitty way that I'm saying it, you know? So I have to just absolutely just let it go and let it drift out to sea and then come back to it tomorrow and, you know, talk about it.
Kind of sleep on it.
Yeah. And I learned that from experience. I would, you know, early in the band, I would be really mad about something that, you know, isn't that big of a deal, but it would be a really big deal to me. And I was bewildered. I didn't understand that no one is going to care about it as much as the people in the band care about it. No one. It's just that you can't. It's impossible. And I didn't realize that was a thing. So I would be really mad. And, like, I remember one of my bandmates saying, like, I said, like, oh, that one part that said, and he was like, oh, man, it was fine. And I'm like, yeah, it was fine. That's the problem. I don't want to be fine. I want to be great. I don't want to be fine. Fine is not good enough. Now, the message of that is that guy's an asshole. You know what I mean? That's how it reads. And, you know, I know that now, but I didn't know it before. So now I just wait till the next day. And instead of saying, yeah, that's fine, fine isn't good enough, I'll do the thing that you do with improv when you're like an improv actor, when you say yes and.
Sure.
So you keep it in the world of positivity. And yes and, next time let's try it like this. Or, you know, and you really, not only is it better for, like, interpersonal stuff and, like, makes people not fucking resent you, it's more effective.
Sure.
As well, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I can completely see that, and that, because you're just going to create animosity to come back.
Of course.
Whereas if you go about it the way that you're talking about, it can actually be, it's like constructive criticism without the somebody getting pissed off or animosity thing.
Right. Because you're not saying it was bad. You're saying we can make it better.
Sure.
And those sound like the same thing, but they're not.
They're definitely not. Yeah.
Douglas and I were just talking about this at practice last night about how, like, it's the difference between what you're trying to say and how you're saying it, and they're different things, and they're both important, and it's a hard lesson to learn.
I'm writing down what you're trying to say. And how you're saying it. That's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't come up with it, but I've definitely experienced it.
We'll start trying to round this into the end of this. You've had some pretty memorable lyrics, pretty quotable things. Like, we started this with the Every House is Haunted thing before we pushed record. What is there one in particular that people throw at you more than others?
As crazy as it sounds, there's a couple different people who've gotten tattoos of some of our lyrics. Different people respond to different stuff, but I remember when Douglas joined the band, he's been in the band like 3 years now at this point, but when he first joined the band and we first started playing shows, he was amazed that at the shows, he could look out in the audience and see all these people singing along with our lyrics, and he said, I've never been in a band like that before where people knew the lyrics, and I was like, dog, me neither. it's really special, and it's really special to me because, you know, They're the most important part for me. And I just said this in another interview a couple of weeks ago, but like, I understand that they're not the most important thing for a lot of people, and that's okay. If the drums are the most important thing, or the guitar tones, or the arrangement, or the volume, or the screaming, or whatever is important to someone is great. But for me, the words are the most important thing. So when somebody responds to it or connects to it, it like makes me not cry, like sob cry, but I'm getting choked up right now just talking about it. It's a big deal.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Is there one that you get a lot?
It changes. People do seem to, on the new record, people really seem to be responding to that Hostage Therapy song. I'm not sure why, what it is. I mean, I think people can relate to the idea of everyone having problems. So I think that's why that every single house is haunted. I think that's why that resonates with people.
It definitely does.
I mean, it's only been out a week, so it's kind of hard to have too much perspective. But we were talking about it at practice last night about how we didn't see that coming, that multiple people have, you know, publicly and sent DMs about how that they like that song a lot. So. And I mean, the song itself is one part. We just play it differently in the verse than the chorus. And then after that, like, weird middle section, there's a sort of a bridge, I guess. So it's two parts. But it's really one thing, just played differently for 3 minutes.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
What's your favorite tour story?
Well, most recently, this was pretty funny. We were on tour in Europe, and this friend of ours, Joseph, who has been our driver and merch person two or maybe even three times now over there, he's so funny, and he's from Prague, and he's very, like, sort of stern seeming if you don't know him, but it's just his nature. He's actually really funny, and he'll say like insanely inappropriate shit that just gets us all dying laughing. We were walking back to where we were staying after we had played the show. We had loaded up all the stuff in the Sprinter right after the show, and then left it parked at the venue because it was safer be parked at the venue versus on the street by the hotel. So then we all walked back to the hotel, and it was me, Casey, and Douglas, my bandmates, Jake and Matt from Venus Twins, and our friend Philippe from London, who was doing sound for us, and Joseph. And we were all walking, and then we realized that, like, Joseph wasn't with us anymore. And we were like, oh, shit, where's Joseph? And then we heard this, like, clackety-clack sound, and then a little bicycle bell ring, and he just flew past us on a bicycle. He just was on the street that he picked up and just drove past us. And then, you know, when he was done with it, absolutely just threw it on the ground and walked into the hotel. I mean, it's just like, we were laughing like children, man. I don't know, it's not that big of a deal, but like, that's just the thing that I remember most recently that made me laugh really hard. So, there's a thousand different things that happen, good and bad, on tour, but I try to just remember the light, fun stuff.
Sure.
Know?
It's you and Casey have been together for a pretty long time at this point, right?
Yeah, I think he probably joined the band maybe 2015 or 2016. Oh, no, it had to be 2016 because it may have been the end of 2015. I can't remember. I know his first show with us was the 4th of July show in Austin. So that was the first show we played together. I could look up and see when that show was, and then I could tell you that. Maybe it's 2015. So yeah, a long time now.
He gave me a string recommendation that I still use pretty regularly. That night there in 2018. And again, with the 2018 thing, I don't think this was actually recorded, and you might get mad at me for bringing this up, but somewhere in our conversation there, you said something about you could see yourself doing some singer songwriter stuff as you get older. That's still a thing you think you'll do?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've only really been mentioning music that's sort of germane to our band, you know, sound or whatever, but I like a lot of, you know, like what people call alt country or like Americana. I like a ton of that stuff.
Sure.
I've been listening to a lot of it, that latest Jason Isbell record, Weather Vane, by John Bundle, and I was prepared for it to not be as good as some of his other records because the bar is set so high.
Sure.
I think he has 6 Grammys, dude. I mean, he's like,
He's all right.
Like the modern Bruce Springsteen, dude. He's incredible, man. His songs are so good. So, like, I've been listening to his new record a lot. I like Chris Stapleton quite a bit. He's got a really nice voice. His songs are so good, too. So, I like like Wilco a whole bunch, as any middle-aged white American dude is required by law to like. So I like them a lot. So yeah, I love stuff like that. I haven't really dipped my. I like Mark Flanagan a whole bunch, even though he's not, you know, Americana or whatever. He's still sort of singer-songwriter world.
I did the fucking dickhead thing and didn't really go all in on Flanagan until after he died.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, there is so much great stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the man. I got The Winding Sheet, his first record, when I was still in high school, I think. I may have been in college by that point, but I was really big into Screaming Trees when I was in high school. It's the reason I got a wah pedal way back when. I had heard that he did this solo record that Kurt Cobain was on, so I was like, oh my God,
right.
I'm going to go get it. And then, you know, Nirvana made the Lead Belly, Where'd You Sleep Last Night song famous, but like, it was Mark Flanagan did it first, and Kurt Cobain plays guitar on that session.
Right.
Like, all the feedback and stuff in the background, that's him.
Yeah, I actually just finished that Sing Backwards and Weep here recently.
Yeah, have you listened to it? He reads it.
I haven't.
It's on Spotify and YouTube. You can listen to him read the book. Yeah, and he's a very pleasing voice because it's so low, you know.
Right. Let's see here. Let's find a way to wrap this up before we get into the stupid ways that I finish these things. How about the one last thing here we'll do before we do the stupid things is, what's a common myth that you would debunk about being in a band or being a musician?
Well, we get paid last. I don't know that people realize that, but we have to pay all of our bills for whatever it is, whether it's gas and, you know, a place to stay or a meal or, you know, paying for any sort of gear stuff or, you know, just monthly, like, internet bills, you know, Dropbox or whatever.
Sure.
Like, we have to pay our agents and our manager ahead of us. We have to make sure all of our bills are paid, and then what's left is divided between the three of us even. And sometimes that amount is less than what we have paid other people, and it hurts. It hurts. I don't know if it'll be that way forever. I hope it isn't. But I think that people are under the impression that our band is more popular than it is. Like, because the people who do like our band are real passionate about it, and I'm obviously very grateful for that.
Yeah.
Just in the past few weeks, we've been trying to find someone to do merch for this tour because Matt, who has been doing merch for us, basically would have to quit his job and can't quit his job. Matt is one of my best friends also. He lives out in Seattle. He's a sweetheart of a person. But so he couldn't do it. So we've been asking people, and so many people are coming to us saying they want literally 2 and 3 times the amount that anyone in the band makes a week. And they just think that we're making all this money. And we're like, dude, we don't even have a tour manager. And then we pay a person to do sound. The person who does sound literally makes more than anyone in the band makes. That's okay. We've made our peace with that. We've accepted that for now is how it has to be. And it's not a couple dollars more. It's a lot more. But it's the sound is the most important thing. So we pay for that. People don't realize that. They think we're making thousands and thousands of dollars, and it's not happening. You know? It's just not. And I hate to sound like I'm being a crybaby, because if it really bothered me that much, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't play anymore.
Sure, yeah,
but the harsh reality of being in a band at our level, that we get paid less.
And that's, this works its way into, in my brain at least, the importance of picking up a physical copy of the album if you love it.
Oh, yeah.
Or merch at a show or whatever it may be.
Oh, yeah. It's half our money. I mean, it's half of our money. Like, merch sales will be plus minus whatever our guarantee is. Maybe $100 or $200. It's the same amount. Like, it's half of our money.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very important.
It sounds like it, which is a fucking stupid thing to say to wrap that segment up, but that's what I said anyway. It's kind of reactionary.
Yeah, and it's a downer, man. It's a downer. But, you know, I try not to let people see behind the curtain too much because I don't want to bum them out. And like I said, if it bothered me to the point where it was like untenable, I wouldn't be in a band. It's,
sure.
It's a reality of being in a band that I find. Yeah.
So from there, we'll start doing the dumb things that I usually do to wrap these up with, because I went back and listened to the first time you were on the show, and we didn't do these. So,
okay,
sucks to be you. Here you get to do this. So this first one is a complete throwaway. These are some rapid fire questions because we both know what the answer is. Coffee or tea?
Oh, coffee, yeah.
Of course. What's something you could eat for a week straight if you're not on a, you know, watching your weight?
Rice.
Rice?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love rice in all its forms.
I don't have any problems with rice. I just haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah.
Beatles or Stones?
It used to be Stones. It's Beatles now.
That's what Damien from St. Pierre Snake Invasion said last week. It was, I don't know, maybe I need to listen to more Beatles. It's still the Stones for me, damn it.
Well, I grew up with Stones, and I loved them, and I always thought that they were the bad boys. And it turns out they were like art school kids, and the Beatles were actually came from poor backgrounds in Liverpool. And I, you know, that's not the reason. It's just the more I've gotten into them, the more I found out about them. And when we were in the studio, Ryan was playing that Disney Plus Beatles documentary.
Sure.
It was on the flat screen in the studio, and I paid for Disney Plus to start watching it, and it turned me into a Beatles fan. I've got four or five of the records now. I know everyone already knows, but it just occurred to me how great they are for the very, very recent future, or past, rather.
Shocker, Beatles are good.
What?
I said it's a shocker, the Beatles are good.
Yeah, right? I know. It's like I'm fucking discovering something everyone else has known about for 100 years.
It's a fucking hot take.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hot take. Beatles equal good.
I don't know. They're a thing for me where I can go long stretches without listening to them, where I don't really go long stretches without listening to the Stones. But when I do get into a Beatles groove, there's nothing else that scratches that itch. They're clearly the fucking Beatles.
I thought the Beatles were "I Want to Hold Your Hand," and they're not.
Right.
That's not the Beatles. Yeah, it's all that mid-period stuff. Dude, Rubber Soul, come on. Fucking White Album, come on. Revolver,
Revolver, yeah.
Jesus Christ, it's so good. And they were kids, dude. They were kids. They were only a band releasing records for a 7-year window. Isn't that crazy? It's
fucking nuts, man.
And they were doing 2 records a year, man.
That is crazy.
It's wild.
That's the thing that's so easily fucking overlooked. Like, 7 years.
Yep.
That's nuts.
I know. Yep.
Meanwhile, the Stones have gone on for 27 decades and have a whole bunch of throwaway albums. Okay, you guys are starting to pull
them.
Me around.
Yeah, I love them too so much, man. I just listened to Beggar's Banquet front to back a couple weeks ago, because there's a song on there called Factory Girl. And I recently went through a breakup, and I was a woman who I've been dating a long time. Like, that song really hit the spot for me in that moment. It really went like, it really reminded me of who I am and where I come from and where I'm going. It made me feel good about myself. Yeah, Factory Girl, good one.
Stones are good too, is what we can pull out of that.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest gift you've ever received?
Jeez. That's a strange question. Jeez, I'm sorry that I'm not doing rapid fire. I can't think.
You know what? This segment has been a thing for a long fucking time, and it's never actually rapid.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of gifts I've received, and you know, it's weird at Christmas, like, I don't want to, as I'm a grown man, I don't want anything from my mom for Christmas, but she forces me to give her a list of things, and a friend of mine was like, dude, she's not getting you stuff because you need stuff, she's getting you stuff because she wants to give you something, and I was like, oh, I thought it was about me,
right.
It's about the act of giving for her is what it is. I had it backwards, I felt like guilty, like, I'm too grown up to be getting presents from my mom for Christmas. And like, she wants to do it. It's not out of obligation. She wants to do it. So, I think that's not a weird gift, but a weird realization I've had recently.
Sure.
The act of giving is a huge part of the equation. It's not just about receiving the gift.
That's a not uncharacteristically smart thing for you to say there.
I'm sober and have been a long time, and a big part of that is service. And I have learned in the time I've been sober that, like, you know, people talk about love languages. For some people, it's like food or physical touch or like, you know, words of affirmation or stuff like that. And mine is service. It's doing things for people. You know, like, I don't know. That's in my mind, that means more to me than saying something, taking action and doing something for
sure.
someone. So,
and apparently, it's the same way for mom.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Favorite season?
Fall.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, and that also comes from growing up, like, in South Florida and the Everglades, and I live in Georgia now and have for, you know, I don't know, 25, 30 years. But when the weather, the hot weather first breaks and you first start getting that little crisp sniff and the humidity drops, and it, I feel the most alive at that time of year, yeah.
If you could ask any animal one question, what would it be and what would the animal be?
It would be my cat, Taco. And
I kind of figured that.
I would ask if she misses.
Okay. I won't go any further with that. Scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at keeping secrets?
10.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a big part of sobriety is anonymity. And that was drilled into me at a very early age, that there are not every single thing needs to be shared with every single person. I need to be really bad about, you know, not playing it close to the vest and just, like, saying everything. And over time, I have learned that it's not a bad thing for me to not tell everyone everything. I used to think, like, oh, if it's a lie of omission, then it's still a lie and it seems too hard on myself. But I've learned over time that if something is said to you in confidence, it's said to you out of love, and it's said to you with the expectation that it doesn't go past you, and to betray that is really shitty.
Sure, yeah. That's another, we come at it maybe from just slightly different angles, but that's another thing that you and I have extremely in common. Go-to karaoke song.
Oh, I won't do karaoke, because if I sing, I want to get paid to do it.
Okay. I can't argue with that.
No, I'm kind of joking about that, but, like, I just don't like karaoke because it's generally, like, enjoyed when people are, like, kind of drinking a whole bunch, and I feel really alienated in those situations, you know? So I don't want people to not enjoy it. I just excuse myself, and, you know, sometimes I'm a bit of a loner on tour because I don't want to be the downer in the room. I want
sure.
people to have fun and do that, but it's just not fun for me. So, because, you know, when people's personalities start changing, they're changing together, and it's fun, but I'm not changing, so it's alienating. So I just don't do karaoke. Yeah.
Makes sense. Last one here, sausage links or patties?
That's interesting.
I think what you say interesting, but I think you mean stupid.
No. We, you know, we're from the South, so, like, whenever we're on tour, we're either at Waffle House or Cracker Barrel. Not every day, but a lot. And as soon as we get out of the tour, we're like, man, Shoney's bullshit. I have this bullshit. This place just sucks. But I remember when we were at Cracker Barrel once, Donnie, who's not in the band anymore, but we're still friends. We actually just started another band about maybe 6 months ago. It's just he and I so far. We'll see what happens. But he would ask them, like, at Cracker Barrel, whether they were the links or the patties, because on the sausage patties at Cracker Barrel, they put, like, some weird, like, fake smoke flavoring on them,
sure.
and they taste like chemical, and they're gross. So I'm going to have to say links, because the snap of the link facing is part of the enjoyment for it, yeah.
That's a another appropriately in-depth answer.
Yes.
This one I think I know the answer to. This is the completely original. Nobody's ever done anything like this before. You, Christian of Horrors, are sent to an island by yourself for the rest of your life. You get to take one album with you. What will it be?
Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, Wilco.
Okay. I kind of wrote down a guess here earlier, and it was Sex Pistols. I was wrong.
Well, yeah, that's my favorite record, for sure. But, yeah, as far as, like, a record changing over time, like, that's a record that I can listen to years apart and get something different out of. Yeah.
Okay, great. This is where I'm going to end it here, man. Thank you for Christian of Horrors for joining me today. Not for the first time in this episode. I'll note that I've had the new album War on actual repeat since its release, and I can't recommend highly enough that anybody hearing this do the exact damn same thing if you're not already. Thanks continually to the sponsors Sonic Temple and Brimminghorn. More Sonic Temple info giveaway coming soon. Follow the podcast and Horrors on all the socials. Review us on iTunes and give stars on Spotify, please and thank you, as well as being sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever it is that you're listening to it from. Christian, this is where you get to be released of me, and I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce Sicko so we can end this thing properly.
Okay. Before I introduce it, I want to say come see us live. Because
that is what
the band is. Records are great, and they're fun, and all that stuff. Come see the show. It's a different thing, and it's important. So I'm Christian Lembach. I'm in a band called Whores. We have a record called War, and this song is called Sicko.